Chapter 5, Back Home at Last. At about 8 or 9 in the morning, I came to the same place from which I had viewed the world on my arrival. I thought of my hasty conclusions of that evening and laughed bitterly at my confidence. Here was the same beautiful scene, the same rich plants, the same splendid buildings and magnificent ruins, the same silver river running between its fertile banks. The Eloi were moving among the trees in their delightful clothes, and some were bathing in exactly the same place where I had saved Weena. Weena. The memory of her gave me a sharp pain. The domes above the wells which led to the underworld rose like spots on the landscape. I understood now what all the beauty of the overworld people meant. Their day was very pleasant as the day of the cattle in the field. Like the cattle, they knew of no enemies, and their end was the same. Only those animals which have to face a great variety of needs and dangers have intelligence. Anyway, after the efforts, excitement, terror and deep grief of the past days, the peaceful view and the warm sunlight were very pleasant. I was very tired and sleepy, so I lay down on the grass and had a long, refreshing sleep. I woke up just before sunset and came down the hill towards the White Sphinx. I had my bar in one hand and the other hand played with the matches in my pocket. But as I was coming near the Sphinx, I noticed something surprising. The bronze doors were open. I stopped before them, hesitating to enter. Inside, there was a small room, and in a corner, there was the time machine. I touched the starting levers in my pocket, and was so happy to see my invention again that I threw the iron bar away. There was no need to use it, I thought. I walked inside, and I was surprised to find the time machine in perfect condition. It had been carefully oiled and cleaned. While I was examining and touching it proudly, the thing I had expected happened. The bronze panels suddenly closed with a noisy metallic sound. I was trapped in the dark. Immediately, I sensed the Morlocks' presence. They were coming towards me. But I wasn't worried at all. I had the matches, and the only thing I had to do was to fix the starting levers and disappear as quick as lightning. Very calmly, I tried to strike a match. But I hadn't taken into consideration one little thing. The matches were of the kind that light up only when you strike them on the box itself. You can imagine how all my calm left me. The Morlocks were getting closer and closer. One touched me. In the dark, I hit a couple of them with the levers and began to climb into the seat of the machine. Then I felt several hands touching me and trying to seize the levers. But at last I was able to fit the starting lever into its slot and pressed it immediately. The Morlocks' hands slipped away from me. Soon the darkness faded away, and I found myself in the same grey light and confusion I have already described. I have already told you of the sickness and confusion that comes with time travelling. For an indefinite time, I sat in the machine, quite unaware of where I was and where I was going. Then I looked at the dials. One dial records days, another thousands of days, another millions of days, and another thousands of millions. And I was amazed to find where I had arrived. I was going forward into the future, and I found that the hand which shows thousands was turning round as fast as the hand measuring seconds of a watch. The greyness grew darker, and I could only see an incredibly rapid change of dark and light, night and day. The sun was visible like a comet flashing across the sky for a few instants. The moon and the stars had disappeared. I realized I was going too fast. So I began to reverse my motion cautiously. The hands of the dials went slower and slower. The thousands one turned very slowly, and the days one seemed motionless, until, very dimly, I began to see a desolate beach. I stopped very gently and started to look round. The sky was no longer blue, it was black. The rocks about me were of a reddish colour, and the only trace of life which I could see was the green vegetation that covered the rocks facing southeast. The machine was standing on a sloping beach. There were no waves, because there was not a breath of wind. Only a slight, oily rise and fall showed that the eternal sea was still moving and living. There was a sense of oppression in my head, and I noticed that I was breathing very fast. The sensation reminded me of my only experience of mountaineering, and from that I judged the air to be more rarefied than it is now. Suddenly, I heard a harsh scream and saw a thing like an enormous white butterfly fluttering up into the sky. It disappeared behind some low hills. The sound of its voice was so dismal that I shivered and seated myself more firmly upon the machine. Looking round me again, I noticed that what I had taken to be a reddish mass of rock was moving slowly towards me. Then I saw that the thing was actually a monstrous creature similar to a crab. Can you imagine a crab as large as that table, with its many legs moving slowly and uncertainly, its long antennae changing position from side to side continually, and its big eyes staring at you on either side of its metallic front? I could see its mouth open and close up and down as it advanced. While I was staring at this fearful apparition coming towards me, I felt a touch on my cheek as that of a fly. I tried to send it away with my hand, but in a moment it returned, and almost immediately another came by my ear. I tried to hit it and caught something thread-like. It slipped quickly out of my hand. I immediately turned and saw that I had seized the antenna of another monstrous crab that stood just behind me. Its evil eyes were moving up and down, its mouth was wide open, and its large, ugly claws were descending upon me. In a moment my hand was on the lever, and I placed a month between myself and these monsters. But I was still on the same beach, and I saw them again as soon as I stopped. Dozens of them were crawling here and there in the dim light upon the mossy green. I can't describe the feeling of terrible desolation of that world. The red sky in the east, the blackness in the north, the salt dead sea, the stony beach full of those horrible crawling monsters, the uniform depressing green of the mossy plants, the thin air that hurt my lungs, all contributed to a terrifying effect. I moved on 100 years, and there was the same red sun, the same dying sea, the same chill air, and the same crowd of crabs crawling among the green weed and the red rocks. So I travelled on, stopping from time to time, in great steps of 1,000 years or more, drawn on by the mystery of the earth's fate, watching with a strange fascination the sun grow larger and duller in the sky, and the life of the old earth die away. At last, more than 30 million years from now, I stopped once more. The crawling multitude of crabs had disappeared, and the red beach, except for its green mosses, seemed lifeless. I was seized with a bitter cold. I could see the tops of the hills were pinkish-white. I looked around me to see if any traces of animal life remained, but I saw nothing moving in earth or sky or sea. The green on the rocks alone showed that life was not extinct. A cold wind began to blow, and snow started to fall. The world was absolutely silent, and darkness was everywhere. The sky was totally black. A horror of this great darkness came on me. The cold and the pain I felt in breathing overcame me. I shivered, and a deadly nausea seized me. I felt weak and incapable of facing the return journey, and felt I was fainting. But a terrible fear of lying helpless in that remote and awful twilight gave me strength as I climbed onto the seat of the machine. So I came back. I suppose I was unconscious for a long time on the machine. The sequence of day and night began again. The sun became golden again, the sky blue. I breathed with greater freedom, while the hands were turning backward upon the dials. At last, I saw again the dim shadows of houses, the signs of decadent humanity. These too changed and passed, and others came. Soon, when the millions dial was at zero, I decreased speed. I began to recognize our own pretty and familiar architecture. The thousands hand ran back to the starting point. The night and day changed slower and slower. Then, the old walls of the laboratory came round me. Very gently now, I slowed the machine down. Finally, I turned off the machine. I felt exhausted, but when I saw about me again the old familiar laboratory and my tools just as I had left them, I felt relieved. I got off the device with great difficulty and sat down on my armchair. For several minutes, I trembled violently. Then I became calmer. Around me was my old workshop again, exactly as it had been. I thought, perhaps I fell asleep, and that was a nightmare. And yet, not exactly. The machine started from the southeast corner of the laboratory, and now it is in the northwest corner. That gives you the exact distance from my little lawn to the base of the White Sphinx, into which the Morlocks had carried my machine. For a time, my brain went blank. Soon I got up and came through the passage here, limping, because my foot was still painful. I saw the newspaper on the table by the door. I found the date was indeed today, and looking at the clock, I saw the hour was almost 8 o'clock. I heard your voices and dinner noises of plates and cutlery. I hesitated. I felt so sick and weak. Then I smelt good meat and opened the door. You know the rest. I washed and dined, and now I'm telling you the story. I know,
he said after a pause,
that all this will be absolutely incredible to you. To me, the one incredible thing is that I'm here tonight in this old familiar room looking into your friendly faces and telling you these strange adventures.
He looked at the doctor.
No, I can't expect you to believe it. Take it as a lie or a prophecy. Say I dreamt it in the workshop. Think I've been considering the destinies of our race while I have imagined this fiction. But taking it as a story, what do you think of it?
He said, filling his pipe. There was a momentary silence. Then chairs began to move. I took my eyes off the time traveller's face and looked round at his audience. Motionless, the doctor was gazing at our host. The publisher was looking at his cigar, the sixth. The lawyer took out his watch from his pocket and pretended to check the time. The psychologist was looking round for the others' reactions. The publisher stood up with a sigh.
"What a pity it is you're not a writer of stories,"
he said, putting his hand on the time traveller's shoulder.
"You don't believe it?"
"Well,
I knew it."
The time traveller turned to us.
"Where are the matches?"
he said. He lit one, and puffing said,
"To tell you the truth, I hardly believe it myself. And yet..."
His eye fell upon the dead white flowers on the table. The doctor stood up and came to the lamp to examine the flowers.
"They are very strange,"
he said. The psychologist took one of the flowers to examine it too.
"It's 1:15,
said the lawyer.
"How shall we get home?"
"There are plenty of cabs at the station," said the psychologist.
"It's a curious thing," said the doctor. "You know I'm an expert, but I certainly don't know what kind of flowers these are. May I have them?"
The time traveller hesitated. Then suddenly he said,
"Certainly not."
"Where did you really get them?"
said the doctor.
"They were put into my pocket by Wiener when I travelled into time. But did I really travel through time?"
There was another moment of silence again. Then suddenly he caught the lamp and carried it through the door into the corridor. We followed him, looking at one another puzzled. There was the machine, sure enough. It was solid to the touch, with brown spots and bits of grass or moss on the lower parts and one twisted bar. The time traveller put the lamp down on the laboratory table and caressed the damaged bar.
"It's all right now,"
he said.
"The story I told you was true. I'm sorry to have brought you out here in the cold."
He took up the lamp and we returned to the smoking room in an absolute silence. Soon after, everybody left the house. I shared a cab with the publisher. He thought that the story was an extravagant lie. Personally, I thought that the story was both fantastic and incredible, but at the same time, so reasonable and credible. I lay awake most of the night thinking about it. I decided to go and see the time traveller again the next day. I was told he was in the laboratory, but the laboratory was empty. I stared for a minute at the time machine and put up my hand and touched the lever. At that, the machine started to swing like a tree branch shaken by the wind. I jumped back immediately, feeling like a child who has touched something forbidden. I came back through the corridor. The time traveller met me in the smoking room. He had a small camera under one arm and a rucksack under the other. He laughed when he saw me.
"Good morning, my friend. I'm terribly busy,"
said he,
"with that thing in there."
"But isn't it a trick? Do you really travel through time?"
"Really and truly, I do."
And he looked frankly into my eyes. He hesitated. His eye wandered about the room. Then he said,
"I know why you came. Thank you. It's very good of you. Can I ask you to wait for me only half an hour? There are some newspapers and magazines here. If you stay to lunch, I'll prove to you this time that travelling is real. Will you forgive my leaving you now?"
I agreed, hardly understanding then the full meaning of his words. I heard the door of the laboratory shut, seated myself in a chair, and took up a daily paper. What was he going to do before lunchtime? Then suddenly I remembered that I had promised to meet Richardson, the publisher, at 2. I looked at my watch and saw that I could still get there in time. I got up immediately and went down the passage to tell the time traveller. As I put my hand on the handle of the door, I heard an exclamation, suddenly interrupted, and a click and a thud. A violent current of air hit me as I opened the door and the sound of broken glass falling on the floor came from within. The time traveller was not there. I seemed to see a ghostly, indistinct figure sitting in a whirling mass of black and brass for a moment. A figure so transparent that the table behind, with its sheets of drawings, was absolutely distinct. But this apparition disappeared in a few seconds. The time machine had gone! The laboratory was empty, apart from a cloud of dust and a window pane which had just been broken. I felt an unreasonable amazement. I knew that something strange had happened, and for the moment I could not distinguish what the strange thing might be. As I stood staring, the door opened, and the manservant appeared. We looked at each other. "Has the master gone out that way?" said I.
"No, sir. No one has come out this way. I was expecting to find him here."
At that I understood and decided to stay on, waiting for the time traveller, waiting for the second, perhaps still stranger story, and the specimens and photographs he would bring with him. But I'm beginning now to fear that I must wait a lifetime. The time traveller disappeared 3 years ago, and as everybody knows now, he has never returned.